Welcome, everyone. This is Lindsay Kenny, and welcome to Dr. Thelma Jones. Thelma, say hi to everybody.
Hi there. Great to be with you, Lindsay.
It's great to have you, too. Thelma and I have known each other a couple of years studying EFT together, and I want to give her kind of a formal announcement and introduction, and then I'll tell you more of a personal one. But Doc, I call her Thelma, so I may slip and call her that, but we'll call her Dr. Jones. People call you Dr. Thel?
You can call me anything you like.
Don't call you late for dinner.
I was going to say something, but I held off.
Well, anyway, Dr. Jones specializes in helping people. That's just kind of who she is, with chronic and physical and emotional conditions, and especially those that haven't been resolved through traditional medicine. She's an integrative MD and is board certified in internal medicine and hematology, and uses her 35 years of experience in Western medicine and oncology, coupled with her expertise in complementary or alternative medicine, such as EFT. And she provides additional options for mind-body wellness. So that's the kind of doctor I like to go to, an MD or a DO or someone with medical experience as well as non-traditional experience. And I might mention that Dr. Jones is also an EFT practitioner and practices out of Scarsdale, New York, but she actually has clients like I do and a lot of practitioners all around the world by Skype and by phone. I think now that's the kind of formal part. The personal part is that Dr. Thel is a grandma, a mother, and daughter and sister and all of the things a lot of us are. But she's also a unique person, a unique human being with a huge heart. She's incredibly intelligent. I've grown to know her and love her over the last couple of years and admire her greatly for her willingness to help others and to reach out to the world through medicine and through EFT and to have an open mind about this, because a lot of traditional physicians and medical people are not. So when we have an expert like Dr. Thelma to help us, I'm thrilled about that. So Dr. Thelma, Dr. Jones, let's talk about your topic tonight, which is cancer is not an automatic death sentence. So originally I had seen the title as cancer is not a death sentence and then later as not an automatic death sentence. So tell us what you mean by that.
Well, what I mean is that, number one, when people get a diagnosis of cancer, by the way, that's a tappable issue because that's a trauma in and of itself, Lindsay.
Oh, yeah. It's true. That's true.
So, I mean, I am a fan. I just want to say I'm a fan of EFT and you'll be hearing me talking about that a lot. As one who was very, very skeptical to begin with, because I've been trained traditionally, but I've always been outside the box. But my belief is, and I'm going to talk about my beliefs and everything I'm talking about, my beliefs based on data and my personal experience with clients. There may be controversy about what I say, and I am emphasizing that people cannot take what I say as a dogma, but highly well-informed recommendations, because people have to look at their own issues as individuals.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that said, did you want to say something?
No, just I think that my audience is used to people that are controversial.
You mean like you, Lindsay? A wonderful controversial, by the way. My belief is that cancer can be viewed as a chronic illness like diabetes or heart disease rather than seeing it as an automatic death sentence, because I can get into what I mean by chronic disease. Is that all right?
Yes, go ahead.
There are multiple lifestyle transitions, and let me just say something about transitions. It's all in what somebody sees or hears. I always use the word transitions because change is threatening to some people, so I like transitions. But there are multiple lifestyle transitions that can be made, and I think we'll talk about some of them that can be taken for prevention once one has had cancer, to prevent recurrence, and even true after it is spread. So that is, if one is not yet cured or in remission, if one has cancer, one can live with the disease under control. I firmly believe that. So just like diabetes, what we can do is monitor it, reassess, reevaluate, and readjust treatment and lifestyle measures so that the cancer is stable or dormant. Because after all, we're all constantly forming cancer cells in our body, and there are multiple ways to contain that. And so I don't see it as an automatic death sentence. And the education that we're talking about today is key, because that means taking charge. And we'll see later, we'll go into why taking charge and not feeling helpless is key to prevention and recurrence. So with education and supervision, one does not have to necessarily see this as, oh, that's it, I'm doomed. And that in itself, it says, is a problem. So I really believe it's a self-help process, but personally, I don't believe it's a self-help project. And that's why I see cancer as not an automatic death sentence.
Well, that really makes sense. I like the taking charge part as opposed to just it's a diagnosis and they're a sentence, and that takes it out of somebody's control. I think, as you know, you do a lot of talking on stress. The biggest stressor is being responsible for something over which you have little or no control. And when somebody tells us you're going to die, which is what we hear if somebody says you have cancer, they're thinking that that is a death sentence. And if we look at it a different way and just say, now, no, it's a transition and a time of your life and all of the other ways, and deal with it in a different way, they can take charge. They're not handed their pink slip of life, so to speak.
Well, you know, I talk a little later about stress, but I might mention regarding what you just said, it's also how the person looks who's addressing them, who's informing them, and it's also how one perceives them. But the cells of the immune system, I really want to go into it later, are especially sensitive to feelings of helplessness, that nothing can be done to overcome the disease. And I would love to address that a little bit later.
Yeah, that's a really big part. That's really true. So tell me why you think that this topic of cancer not being an automatic death sentence is relevant for the EFT community now.
Well, first of all, I think everything's relevant.
Me too. I think so.
So, I mean, I just absolutely do. And I tell my clients, if I heard myself 15 years ago what I'm doing now, it'd probably put me away. But, I mean, I really do believe, and I'm not brainwashed, I really do believe from what I've seen and my experience that there's nothing irrelevant for the EFT community. But the reason right now is that I think we're surrounded by a lot of fear, helplessness, and there's a lot of stress in our society right now. Of course, that can be addressed easily with EFT. One of the biggest concerns I see is for people wanting to stay healthy, avoid illness and disease. And by the way, I don't believe avoiding is the way to go. I think going towards wellness. I like to move towards the goal rather than away from us. So people all over the world that I've worked with have these common emotional denominators. It's not unique to our language, to the United States. But fear of cancer, and we're talking about fear, is one of the biggest fears on anyone's list.
Uh-huh.
And it gets into fear and anger, why me, and all of those things are very, 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 very relevant to the EFT community. We know that the influence of our emotions and our physiology, and I'm going to tell you about some studies because it warms my heart, you know, as having been a traditional practitioner, which I never really was totally traditional, about how we now have information about how illness and wellness can be really intimately related to our thoughts. So for me, in my practice, at any time, my professional world, EFT is an essential, absolutely essential ingredient in the healing process. In my nearly 40 years of practice, I have personally yet to see a major illness that has not been preceded by a trauma within the preceding 1 to 2 years. And, of course, this is applicable to cancer. And these traumas, of course, may trigger earlier traumas for which we use EFT. So
Wait. Don't go too fast there. That's a pretty important thing you just said.
Go ahead.
Because I've been saying that for a while, but I'm not a doctor, and I don't play one on TV either. I'm just a coach, but I have been saying that for years, been doing EFT for at least 10 years now, and I've said over and over again, I have yet to find a serious illness that hasn't been preceded by some kind of a trauma a year or two beforehand. And you just said in your 40 years of medical practice, you find that's true. Am I understanding that correctly?
You're understanding it correctly. Again, years ago, I've always dealt with that, but when somebody comes into me, I take an extensive history, emotional, social, and all of that, and I always, my question is, so what happened, it could be more recent, but what happened, and it could be a little later, but what happened generally in the year or two before your diagnosis, and invariably I'll hear nothing, but when one spends a little time and gives somebody a chance to talk, there's always something. It could be a bad boss that reminded them of a father. It could be a death. It could be a loss. It could be so many different things, but it's something that for that person unsettle them based on their perceptions of the world and their childhood history, and that is their trauma. And I'll give you some studies later that will show that really that makes sense.
Okay, good. That's good to know. I like to be I like EFT backed up by science. It's good.
Okay.
And I interrupted you, so go ahead with that thought, because I have lots of questions here for you, but I interrupted you and said, wait, what do you mean? I wanted to
No, that's okay. Feel free to interrupt.
I'm
used to you interrupting, Lindsay. That's fine. You have valuable insights, and you're asking me from your experience. I think sharing experiences is very important, because your world, essentially, although we meet in EFT, our worlds have been different in many respects, so your experience is as valid as mine.
Well, in a different way.
In a different way, yes.
But you mentioned early that you said cancer can be viewed as a chronic disease. So what do you mean by that?
Well, I thought I had just addressed it. Diabetes is a chronic disease. Heart disease is a chronic disease. And people live with it, and they're being treated, more traditionally. I have nothing against traditional medicine, but I think chronic illnesses require a little bit different approach. So cancer can be seen as something one can live with.
Oh.
In other words,
You said that, and that's, you did answer it, because you said, but I didn't realize that you were answering it. You said we have cancer cells already in us.
Everybody is forming cancer. This is not meant to be scary. Everybody's always forming cancer cells.
Mm-hmm.
And although I wanted to get into it a little bit later, and it may be repetitious, there's now a concept of cancer as a seed and the soil in which it grows.
Mm-hmm.
And whether or not somebody developed cancer or not is dependent on a whole bunch of information, which I will give if you want to listen.
Yeah.
And it's so one, we're absolutely always containing this. We're always in flux. And so we have many means of dealing with this. It's when something goes wrong in the body, whether it's inflammation or the immune system or stress, which I think is important to address, that then becomes a problem. It could be somebody's exposed to toxins. Some people will get cancer and some will not. So I didn't want to get into anything such as a cancer personality, so I'm not going to address that right now, but I can discuss that a little bit later about why this is relevant for some people. What I'm trying to emphasize in this discussion, although I talk about this causes this and causes that, is whenever I speak about a cause, there is a way to deal with it or prevent it. I always want to emphasize, this is not to be scary, is absolutely, I really want to be very encouraging, because people have a lot of misinformation. You know, one of the things we deal with fear, is relevant, EFT being relevant, is so much on the internet and so much in the media about causing and what you could do. And, I mean, there's a lot of misinformation, and it's not on purpose, but people don't read all the studies, and not all studies are relevant anyway.
Well, that's true. So you just mentioned that, or maybe you were going to mention this later, what some of the causes of cancers are. Now, you and I just talked about the preceding things, the traumas, like the deaths, betrayal, a move, a divorce, something. But are you saying that toxins in the system? Are there other things?
Well,
smoking.
Are there other what?
Other things you were going to mention about.
Yes, I mean, I can go into a whole list of causes, and then you stop me if you think you don't want me to address it any further. Because the reason causes are important to address is that it enables us to take preventive measures. When we know a cause, we can predict the risk and therefore take action to reduce the recurrence.
Yeah.
So what I'd like to do is start with inflammation, because I think inflammation is a very important cause of cancer. Actually, we now know that inflammation is either a major cause or contributing factor to most cancers. Let me just some of the causes I think are worthwhile addressing, at least a little bit briefly, are inflammation, and I'll define it if you want me to. Stress, and I think stress deserves a definition. Suppression of immunity, nutritional deficiencies, and toxins, and I address internal and external toxins. That said, I will try to demonstrate how these are not in isolation. How they're all interrelated, they're entangled, that one leads to the other and the other leads to this, so I'll try and address that. I already talked a little bit about the helplessness, but I thought inflammation is very important because I think people should understand what inflammation is. I'm sure you've heard about inflammation a lot.
Yeah, yes, and I actually take a supplement for it that was designed by a doctor because I would not have thought that I have inflammation. I'm not overweight. I don't drink. I don't smoke. But my understanding is just about everybody as you age has inflammation. So would you define that?
You mentioned the word aging. I don't believe anything can be blamed on aging, but it is relevant. I'll show you how. I just want to mention something about cancer. It's not one disease. Cancer is more than one disease. We're targeting the cancer. And cancer has multiple processes. It begins, it progresses, it spreads, and we can target those different parts of the process, by the way. But cancer is a disease of inflammation.
Oh.
It is almost every modern disease is caused by or influenced by hidden inflammation. It's a major cause or contributing factor to most illnesses, including cancer, heart disease, dementia, depression. I'll mention that in a minute. Depression is an inflammatory state. So if you want to know what inflammation is, I can briefly describe it.
Yes, please.
Yeah, inflammation can be good or bad, and you'll see a lot of what we're talking about in the body can be good or bad. The body has mechanisms for protection, and it's when it goes off balance that we have a problem. Inflammation is really when the body mobilizes itself when there's an intrusion. Let's say there's an infection or a cut or injury. So white cells come to the area to fight off that intruder. It comes to the aid of the body to heal a wound.
Mm-hmm.
If you've cut your finger and it's all red, that's inflammation. So it's a normal response to injury and a protective mechanism. And let me emphasize, inflammation is necessary for survival. So it's very important. So now if it becomes a runaway train, if it becomes chronic and detrimental, this is when it damages cells and causes all of these diseases. Even atherosclerosis, plaque, is a disease of inflammation. And by the way, I don't think there's any one supplement one can use for inflammation. I think it has to be a multiple approach. I can list the things that lead to inflammation, and then we can go into ones you want. Leaky gut. Sugar, too much sugar, which raises insulin, obesity, stress. I'll have a great experiment on that. Poor diet, lack of exercise. These are all related to inflammation, Lindsay.
I didn't know.
Chronic infections, viruses or bacteria, parasites, toxins such as mercury and pesticides, molds and toxins, and I mentioned stress. So you want me to explain leaky gut briefly?
You're kind of grossing me out with all these things, but yeah.
You know what? We can do something about it.
No, I think it's really important because I had no idea that about all of this. I hear about inflammation. I didn't know it was that prevalent, and it's something that we can have some amount of control over.
That's the key. That's what I'm trying to emphasize.
Yeah, go ahead.
So leaky gut, just briefly, is when the normal microscopic barrier in the gut is destroyed so that toxins come out from the bad bacteria, and these cause inflammation, as I just described. Now, what will cause leaky gut? Now, this is interesting. Antibiotics, gluten, casein. When I tell people go off gluten, they look at me, so I say everything I like is immoral, illegal, or fattening. So antibiotics, gluten, casein, fungus, and stress. Stress will increase leaky gut. Now, I know people know stress can cause heart disease and all kinds of things. The toxins, of course, that come through the leaky gut can cause inflammation. Now, sugar is a no-no. Sugar increases insulin. Insulin causes inflammation as well as cancer, arterial plaque, and all of that. So we don't want to have too much insulin around. Obesity is a major one, and this is important for us in the EFT field because I know a lot of people work with helping people to lose weight. Obesity is an inflammatory state in and of itself. Chemicals that cause inflammation are actually stored in fat tissue. Okay?
Uh-huh.
So that's extremely important. Now, maintaining a healthy weight is important. Now, I want to address stress as a cause because even though we're not discussing stress, I make some stark statements here. I made one about inflammation. Stress is a major contributing factor to the onset and worsening of most illnesses. I'm going to repeat that. Stress is a major contributing factor to the onset and worsening of most illnesses. And stress really is when one is having difficulty coping with the pressures of daily life and feeling overwhelmed, but in fact, anything that is perceived, I emphasize perceived. See, EFT is important in perception, isn't it, Lindsay?
Oh, yes. Everything, yes.
Anything that's perceived by that individual as a threat to their well-being physically or emotionally can be used as a stress to the individual. Now, that said, stress can be good. When one is, of course, if one has a divorce or an abortion or a loss of a job, that is a stress. But did you know that if one gets married, has a child, graduates, that's a stress?
Sure, yeah.
There's a scale called the Holmes-Rahe scale that actually gives points to stressors. And the points that are given to these stressors, good or bad, give you the risk of becoming ill.
Now, tell me the name of that again.
I think it's H-O-M-E-S, R-A-H-E. It may be H-O-N-E-S.
Okay, R-A-H-E?
Yeah, Holmes-Rahe scale, and it really is very, very important. Now, why is this so important? I'm getting excited.
Yeah.
Stress causes inflammation. Do you see? Inflammation is a stressor. Stress causes inflammation. You can't separate these, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this was exciting when I read this because, you know, we know stress, but when I see something that is, I don't think you have to have studies and everything. When I see this, I get excited. There was a study on stress where they exposed people to stress, a timed stressor. They had to produce something. And they looked at cytokines, C-Y-T-O-K-I-N-E-S. Those are inflammatory chemicals that are implicated in all kinds of illnesses, and actually that's what's increased and stored in the fat tissue of obese people. So this study demonstrated that when people were exposed to stress, there was increase in their blood of these chemicals. Can you imagine?
No, yes, I can.
They measured this. In the control group, this was not true. So this was kind of a documentation that stress causes inflammation and it can be measured in the blood.
So what you said it was an increase in by what percentage did it say?
I don't have the percentage. No, it's just a summary of the study. But,
okay.
But the fact that it was measurable and not in the other people, in the control group. So now stress causes hormones to be released to activate an emergency response, which is the inflammatory response. This facilitates the growth and spread of tumors.
Oh.
Now, in one article, this was an article in Nature Reviews Cancer 2006, they cited that stress can provide the optimal soil conditions that cancer cells need to grow faster. So this soil concept then gives us the opportunity to change lifestyle and handle stressors.
You know, Thelma, we need to have another interview on this radio show just about stress. You and I both have done things on stress. I bring it from the layman's point of view, but I think it'd be valuable to have another one just talking about stress. And, of course, the obvious way to alleviate stress is through tapping. We don't have to just stay stressed out all the time. But you're really highlighting, putting the spotlight on how damaging stress can be.
Yeah, I mean, we know, we talk about heart disease and strokes and all of that. And let me give you some more interesting information. Stress, as we perceive it, I emphasize perceive, also causes aging. You know how it causes aging?
No.
On the ends of a chromosome, which is in the gene, I don't want to get too much into that, there's something called telomeres, T-E-L-O-M-E-R-E-S. Now, the telomeres, if you look at a shoelace and the little button at the end of a shoelace, that little knob, that's like the knob on the end of a chromosome, I think. Our children don't know what shoelaces look like, but if they looked at it, they would know that that little knob at the end of the chromosome is important for aging because the process of aging means shortening of those telomeres.
Oh.
And stress shortens telomeres.
Uh-oh.
And it causes aging. And this is another mechanism by which aging stress causes cancer because aging increases the risk of all chronic diseases, including cancer.
That must be why I feel like I'm 93 sometimes.
Well, I always reverse mine. I would say 39 if you use the
there you go.
I won't say what mine is from right to left. Stress also shrinks the hippocampus. That's the memory center in the brain. And actually, this was shown on imaging studies. I love these demonstrations.
Yeah.
The imaging, because, you know, it validates EFT in a way. I cannot say EFT cures or treats an illness. But look how it makes a difference in whether we become ill or not. And that means we have control. I love this control thing.
Well, yeah, because we can tap away stress. A lot of people just will say how anxious they are, stressed they are, frustrated, nervous, upset, anticipatory stuff, fear. All of those are anxiety and stress-producing, and all of those can be affected by tapping. And so if you can control one, then you can control the other. If you can keep – we can't necessarily control the things that are stressful in our lives out there. But like you said, it's our perception of it anyway, not what's out there. You have two people that relate to the same event differently. But whether we get stressed or not, if we tap on stressful events afterwards or at some point during them so that we remove that the stress, how it affects us, the stress can still be going on out there and we can just say, I'm chilling, I'm cool about it. That can make a big difference if we just tap away those stressful things as they come up. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, but you see, I see it as more encompassing. Of course, that's the immediate response, and I can talk about later about what we do about stress. That's the immediate thing that we can do, but since stress is how we perceive it, it's very much based on our past history, you know, our hypnotic state in childhood, as Bruce Lipton talks about the hypnotic state.
Yeah.
So we can get to those core beliefs so that we know we don't even have to take emergency action. We will just not perceive certain things as stresses that we thought were. So I think that it goes even deeper, and you know, of course, you agree with that.
I do agree with that 100%, and as a matter of fact, so people often ask, well, so those things happened to me, then, you know, my brother died or I had an accident or something happened in my childhood, so does that mean I'm going to get cancer? No, it doesn't, because you can tap away that trauma even after you have a diagnosis. You can still tap on and neutralize the trauma, and that allows your body to heal. So while tapping isn't doing the healing, it's eliminating the cause for it, which allows your body to heal. And that's my layman's perception.
Absolutely, I agree, because actually it is a it alleviates the core, and I was going to mention this later, but it actually takes 5 to 40 years for something to grow. In other words, and there were many things in childhood that set the stage.
Mm.
And that's very important. And we're talking about perception. I heard someplace, the brain cannot tell the difference between imagined and real events.
Yeah, the subconscious.
Yeah. And in other words, it becomes real.
Sure. Well, that's why we can sit in a theater and we know we're safe in those theater seats and watch something on the screen and be terrified.
Absolutely, yeah. So I think great minds think alike, right, Lindsay?
That they must, yeah, because ours do. That's scary.
We're helping ourselves a little bit here.
Yeah.
Stress also suppresses immunity. And why is this important? Because we have an immune surveillance property within us. We have immune surveillance, which is constantly seeking out and destroying cancer cells. So if stress suppresses this immunity, then we increase the risk of cancer, and there are ways of reducing stress will help immunity and a diet and other things I can mention. Now, I mentioned the cells of the immune system are especially sensitive to feelings of helplessness. So if somebody gets a diagnosis, says, oh, what can I do? There's nothing I can do. That's a sense of helplessness. There was an interesting study published in Science and Journal, and although this is with rats, I think it has major implications in helping people to feel how they can have control or ability to manage their own fate. Rats were subjected to, there were three groups. One group was given, they grafted tumors onto these rats. And in the first group, they just grafted the tumors. In the second group, they were given electric shocks, but they were taught to avoid those shocks. I'm sure you have an answer what happened already.
Yes.
The third group were given electric shocks with no escape mechanism available. The second group that were able to avoid the shock rejected the tumors even more effectively than the control group, 63% to 53%.
Well,
pardon me?
You're saying they actually put tumors on the mice.
Yes.
And then, but they gave them the ability to avoid the shocks. Did they grow tumors after they were the ones that didn't have any?
That's what I'm going to tell you.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The group that were able to avoid the shock, 63% rejected the tumor. In the control group, they just had the graft, 54% did. So that control was important. The only 23% of the animals without a way to escape the shock rejected the cancer.
Mm.
So having control is very, very important. It's the persistent feeling of helplessness.
Well,
a hopelessness that affects the body's reaction to disease.
Well, that's an amazing thing. I think maybe that's why so many of us are controlling. We we have a reason to be. But, you know, it really makes sense because there's nothing, I mean, this sounds redundant, there's nothing quite as helpless as the feeling of helplessness. I mean,
that's right, it's a vicious cycle, but I don't know if it's controlling. I think controlling may come from our parents. I think this is the ability to control one's fate. It's a little bit different.
Right, I understand.
Yeah, I know you know that. Now, suppressed immunity increases the risk of cancer, and a decreased immunity actually favors the formation of cancer cells.
Well, I want to make sure, because you're a fast talker like I am, and I want to make sure people heard something you said a couple of minutes ago about that, about immunity, that if stress suppresses the immune system, and the immune system is what attacks these cancer cells that are floating around in our body. So if we get stressed, then our immune system can't fight them, and that's why. So when somebody dies or we experience a trauma, our body's immune system is overwhelmed with the stress and can't go fight the cells. And am I interpreting that right as a layperson?
Yeah, it's pretty good as a layperson.
Because people ask me, so why? What does the trauma, how does the trauma start the cancer? You know, why? What's the correlation? Well, I just say, well, it's blocked the energy pathways, and so the body can't move the energy around. But in essence, it's blocking the body's ability to prevent or attack the cancer cells that are already there.
Yeah, there are cells called natural killer cells, T and B cells, all kinds of things in the immune system. Very complicated, but very, 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 very much in balance in the body.
Now, is that sort of like what happens? They say we have viruses in us too, and when we get stressed, we're overwhelmed. We've been traveling or something like that. That's when we often come down with colds. It's not like something we catch, but we're stressed. Our immune system is so busy. Is so overwhelmed and suppressed by the stress that it can't then fight viruses. Is that
absolutely,
the same kind of thing?
Absolutely. I had a doctor here today who insisted something about, well, it's a virus. What does it have to do with my emotions?
Yeah.
Because when the virus has to be fought off by the body. I mean, viruses, cancer cells, the body has a mechanism for dealing with it. But when we're stressed as we perceive it, that immune system isn't functioning appropriate to be able to fight off those foreign invaders or whatever inside of us. And, you know, did you know that immune cells have endorphins on them? You know what endorphins are?
I do, but explain to people.
They're grief hormones. It's found in the brain. There was an interesting book written by Candace Pert, P-E-R-T, on the molecules of emotion, where she demonstrated the endorphins. She talked about endorphins in the brain. If you jog, you know, the endorphins go up, but they're the grief hormones. And I have a questionnaire that measures the endorphins and serotonin and all of those. And the immune cells have endorphins or grief hormones on them and therefore are affected by grief and loss. Can you think, have you heard of a husband or wife succumbing to an illness after the death of their loved one?
Oh, yes, and some die.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we've all seen illness after one has experienced loss. So do you think EFT may be important here?
I think so, yeah.
So, by the way, do you know the largest immune organ in the body?
The largest immune organ?
Mm-hmm.
The skin?
The GI tract of the gut.
Oh.
So, you know, I deal a lot with gut health. Some fellow, I forget his name, Metchnikoff in the 1850s, I never remember where I read things, commented on death begins in the colon. He made a comment. So we have to deal with the GI tract, but do you know what else has an immune system?
What?
Let me tell you, the brain.
Really?
The brain has glial cells, G-L-I-A-L, and that's an immune system. And we often see allergies developing, for instance, after head injuries. I pay special attention to people who have had head injuries. I mean, not any more than other things, but you see, we have a very, very intricate and yet preventive, protective mechanism in our body, and it works very well. Now, that said, nutritional deficiencies also increase the risk of cancer. We talked about stress and inflammation, and most people have marginal nutritional deficiencies, and I can just briefly address some of them people are not too much aware of. Stress, by the way, here is something that's very important. It's been estimated that 85 to 95% of illnesses are caused by nutritional deficiencies or excesses. We have so much control. I mean, inflammation, stress, nutrition, we have so much control over what happens to us. Now, here's the cycle of how they're interwoven. Stress depletes nutrients. Nutritional deficiencies increase stress on the body. And we've seen that there's a concept of soil in which the cancer seed grows. Now, we show that stress can change how the soil is. Negative emotions can provide, or helplessness can provide, a fertile soil. Nutritional deficiencies can do the same. Stress increases inflammation. Inflammation increases stress. And the runaway immune system can cause inflammation. So it's when you it's like dealing with one thing and you do affect the others, but they each actually have to be addressed.
Yeah, I'm really seeing a lot of causes and effects, because when you said that number, the stat statistic 90 to 95%, I couldn't help but bring to mind the statistic I hear all the time, which is 85 to 95% of all illnesses are caused by unresolved emotional issues. Well, if let's just say that the one issue, emotional issue of stress alone, it fits into that statistic. So if you're not having, if you don't have the right nutritional balance in your life, that causes stress on your body, and that stress causes disease. So that's, and it's sort of a daisy chain effect, it sounds like, or domino effect.
It is, because stress depletes nutrients, mm-hmm. magnesium and zinc. Stress depletes nutrients. People under stress have more nutritional deficiencies. So it's quite, as I said, very much entangled.
Yeah.
And let me just mention briefly something about vitamin D deficiency, because that's been in the news lately.
Yeah.
The studies were not adequately all read. Vitamin D deficiency is a major factor in predisposition to breast cancer.
Really?
It's involved in all processes of cancer formation and spread. Vitamin D is anti-inflammatory. We talked about inflammation. It helps the immune system. We talked about the immune system. So I pay special attention to that now. I think there's a lot of uproar in the medical community about the fact that people are told they only need such vitamin D. And I personally, my personal opinion is that they need a level above 50 in their blood. And I'm not going to get into the levels because it's controversial. But certainly I have seen extremely low vitamin D levels in my cancer patients. Now, I'm not doing a double-blind study. This is my experience.
Yeah, I do that all the time, too, and I think it's fair. You're not saying this is a fact. It's just when you observe something over and over again, you kind of start thinking, gee, this seems like it's a prevalent, it's more likely than not to be this way. That makes sense. I'm just hearing on the Today Show today, as a matter of fact, about vitamin D, that the amount that we need, they were saying never more than 4,000 milligrams a day, or it's dangerous or something. What range? You don't have to.
Did you say 4,000 units? Yeah.
Units, yeah.
It's 4,000 units. People should take 10,000 units a day without getting into trouble. Now, I'm not saying that. I read something by a well-known person in vitamin D, and he said that children under, this is not what I'm saying, he said children under 2 need 1,000 units, children up to the age of 4 need 2,000, adults need 5,000. Now, I think you have to measure it. I really like to measure it. I measure these things in the blood, and each individual is unique. If somebody's overweight, they need more vitamin D. So I don't like to give a range, because each person in my practice gets something different based on, and I follow it. People say it's dangerous. It's an old theory that it's that dangerous. You can get 10,000 units for months and not run into trouble. However, that said, I think it absolutely has to be measured. And I think people are coming to me told that a level of 20 is adequate, and they have cancer, and I think that's not appropriate. I don't think that's so. So I don't want to address all the deficiencies, but a major one that I think is surprising for most people is iodine. I do 24-hour urines for iodine. Iodine deficiency is related to breast, thyroid, and ovarian cancers.
Huh.
In fact, breast tissue, thyroid tissue, and ovaries have vitamin D receptors. So I don't want to get too much into it, but there is actually a need, I think, to measure iodine status and vitamin D, and I don't believe people should just pop iodine pills, because it's not appropriate. They don't really know how to do that based on their own individual history. So now we said nutritional deficiencies can cause stress on the body. We know what stress can do. Now we talk about Bruce Lipton, our thoughts affect our genes, right?
Uh-huh.
Nutrition affects our genes. A field called nutrigenomics, nutrigenomics, which is the study of the effect of nutrition on our genes, and that's why I think nutrition and EFT make a... Did you ever hear the song Love and Marriage go together like a horse and
cart? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Carrington and I did a seminar, and we were chuckling about that. So I think that EFT and nutrition go together in the same way. So why is that important? Because I keep hearing about genes. I hear more and more about genetics in medicine. But, you know, I read something a while ago that made sense. Genes determine how we're made, but lifestyle guides our fate. So I think this genetic predeterminism is no longer going to hold.
Well, as a matter of fact, I've been listening to a lot of things on that recently, particularly by Bruce Lipton, saying that we've just kind of thrown the gene thing out the window because he's saying it's not the genetic code, but the little receptors on ourselves, which is back to the perception thing. It's what we perceive, not what's predetermined by DNA or genetics.
Yeah, I mean, our genes have to express themselves in a certain way or manifest illness. You can actually take a healthy gene, and if you give them the right soil, a healthy gene can become abnormal with certain psychological reactions such as sadness, depression. These can profoundly influence the soil in which the cancer seed develops and how genes manifest themselves or express themselves. Mm. So I now firmly believe that, and certainly Bruce Lipton is more educated in that than I am. I think he's right on target, and it's shaking the world, actually.
Yeah, it's called a new biology.
Yeah. So I talked about finally toxins, and we don't have to get too much into it. The toxins can cause cancer and inflammation. I divide them into internal and external toxins. So this is a quiz. What do you think the internal toxins are?
Internal toxins. Well, I don't know. I guess your thoughts or
yes, right on top.
You know.
Our thoughts are internal toxins. They don't have to be, but they are. Let me give you an example of a perception. When people come in and say, I don't ask them this question right off. Do you consider yourself as a cancer patient or a person with cancer? A person perceiving yourself as a cancer patient may feel a victim of the disease, and guess what that is? Helpless.
Oh, yeah.
If they see themselves as a person who happens to have it, they feel empowered and no longer under the control of the disease. And who do you think, without further intervention, I emphasize further intervention, is going to do better?
Well, the one that feels they have control of it.
Yes. So remember the rat experiment on helplessness.
Uh-huh.
So because the thoughts change our physiology. Let me give an example of some thoughts. Is it my fault that I caused the cancer? What could I have done differently? I did everything right, and it still happened. These are common thoughts.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And I don't know anyone who's done it all right because there are things they haven't done. So that's good news.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to belabor the point that there are many other emotional states such as anger and fear, but depression, I must emphasize, because we deal a lot with depression and EFT. Depression is an inflammatory state. In depression, those chemicals causing inflammation are elevated.
Yeah, that makes sense. I want to go back to that, what you were just saying. I hear people describe their cancer. Boy, it just seems like I have a lot of people in my life, Jack and I do now, that they've either recently died from it or been diagnosed with it. And it's interesting how they communicate about it, how differently they feel about it, just depending on their attitude. Some will say, I have cancer, as opposed to I was diagnosed with cancer, which is like, so they're telling me that I have it, but it's not something that it's not automatically a death sentence, and you just can hear it in their words, and they're pursuing different kinds of treatments, and the ones that say I have it are getting their will in place and picking out burial plots almost. And that attitude can play a huge role, in my opinion, on how they get through it or not.
I see that all the time. But depression is a very that's the sense of victim or identity is how they identify themselves. It's an identity mm-hmm. issue, actually.
Yeah.
You know, depression plays a major role in many things. And again, I have to give another seminar on this, but it was actually shown that people with heart disease have a poor prognosis when they're depressed and those without depression, and this was more important, a prognostic feature or outcome than the actual heart failure itself or the ejection fraction of the heart. Isn't that interesting?
Say that again, because I think people want to make sure they understand that.
People in a study, patients with heart disease had a poorer or worse outcome when they were depressed than those who were not depressed. You know, if somebody's in heart failure, their heart doesn't pump properly, they have a low ejection fraction. That was less relevant for their outcome than their depression.
Wow, isn't that something?
Yep. Remember, that's an inflammation, depression. So, you know, we think we have a monopoly on the influence of the mind on our physiology.
Mm-hmm.
Well, grab this. This really hit me. Galen, a Greek physician, 200 years ago postulated that sadness can shorten life, that depressed people were more prone to develop illness.
Wow, that was 200 years ago?
Yeah. It actually takes 5 to 40 years, as I mentioned, for detectable abnormality to become a tumor. So you can see the role of childhood.
Well, but Thelma, a lot of times I hear clients that had bad news of some kind, a divorce or some other tragedy, and then somewhere between 6 months and 18 months, it seems to be when they contract cancer. So are you saying it takes 5 years for it to grow?
I'm saying when there's something in childhood.
I see.
You know, I'm talking about that. Cancer may take 8 years to grow. I mean, I don't want to get into tests, but that's where certain tests, like mammography, can find something 8 to 10 years before, you know, it's actually seen on traditional tests. You know, that's another whole thing. But, you know, it's what all these things do is influence the soil that the cancer seed develops in. It influences the soil.
And what would you describe the soil?
The soil is like it's the terrain. In other words, if there's not adequate nutrition, if there's sadness, emotions, nutrition is influencing whether or not the seed grows.
I see.
All these things I mentioned, like the immune surveillance. But for me, trauma is, as I said, a universal precursor to cancer. You know, there was a study, this is another interesting study, if you're interested. There was a study in which women with breast cancer interviewed, and people know themselves. These women said they were convinced that their illness was related to a major stress in their lives. They noted that.
Uh-huh.
And it's been negated, generally been negated, but Dr. David Spiegel, a well-known psychiatrist, ran a support group. This is about support for women with metastatic breast cancer. Those in the support group survived twice as long as those in the control group.
Wow.
Those who attended more regularly had a longer survival. You think emotions play a role?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm getting more and more evidence that it does. And I don't want to get too much into the external toxins because of time, but I think mercury is an important factor. Mercury may be a causative factor in cancer, and actually I investigate this a lot because mercury may be a possible reason why some people have a poor response to chemotherapy. So, I mean, all these toxins are important. Everybody has petroleum in their body. Women with breast cancer may have more toxins in their breast tissue. Now, get this. Do you work at home? Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Living at home can be toxic. Women, this is a government study. Women in the home had a 45% greater incidence of breast cancer when they worked at home than people who did not.
Really? Why?
Well, because of toxins. Cleaning products, sprays, they're all toxic.
Well, I would think there'd be a lot of stuff in the workplace, people coughing on them.
That's true, but somehow this is what this study showed. Now, will it hold up? I don't know. This is one study many, many, many years ago, many, many years ago. Of course, you know, tap water is interesting, and chlorine, so I recommend chlorine filters.
I use filtered water, too. You know, I've heard, Thelma, that the biggest predeterminant of someone getting cancer is obesity. How does that fit in with the statistic? One, does that sound true to you, and how would that fit in with the inflammation? Are they related?
Well, obesity is an inflammatory state, as I said. Women with who are obese, in the fat they store these chemicals, these cytokines, and that's a major cause of cancer. I mean, is that the only cause? No, there's a major cause of heart disease.
We know
that's all inflammatory.
Well, and a lot of one of the things you're talking about is this helplessness feeling and this lack of control or being able to play a role in it. Almost all of the things you've talked about are preventable things. Meaning, two big factors I know that they ask you or that they look for at a doctor's office: are you overweight and do you smoke? Both of which are huge contributors, toxins on one hand, depression, nutrition. The things that you're mentioning are things that seem like they are things we can control, that we have a choice over.
I love the word choice, and that's why I said at the very beginning we're talking about causes, but I want people to know that there's ultimate, you know, we have ultimate control. And that's why I said I don't think it's a self-help process, but not a do-it-yourself project, because there's a lot of things to put together here, deficiencies, stressors, and all kinds of things. And where I think EFT plays a key role, I think there are many other things that can be done. But absolutely, all these things are preventable, but people get scared because how do I lose weight? How do I stop smoking? EFT plays a major, major role here.
Yes, because it can help you do all of those things and help you eat right. One of the things I work on with people is setting up the life that they want to live, being healthy, a healthy lifestyle, because we can choose what we eat. Even those people that say, I can't afford healthy foods, that's a myth or a belief. It's not necessarily true. But it's interesting that people will say, I can't afford healthy foods, but they buy cigarettes. And I'm not being judgmental here. I'm just saying that there are so many things that are in this world that we can't control. The wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and the earthquakes in Haiti and other things that are stressful but out of our control. And there are so many things that are totally within our control, and that's what we eat, the exercise, the things we put into our body, what we say to ourselves, smoking or not, those kind of things that are totally in our control, whether we recognize it or not. So what role can EFT play regarding risk and reoccurrence of cancer?
Well, we discussed some of the causes so we can take the necessary steps. EFT is key. You talk about people changing lifestyles. I say transition. I like transition much better.
Yeah.
I think it's a much easier word. It's a smoother flow towards a goal. What EFT does is help guide people, reduce resistance. There are core issues people have that are blocking their ability for self-care and for changing and for doing what they have to do. And you just mentioned some of the key things and lifestyle changes. And I always say to people, it's very cheap. Sleep, exercise, nutrition.
Yes, that's right.
Three cheap prescriptions.
Yeah.
And because, you know, they don't even realize what these things do. If someone has an adequate nutrition, you can have, number one, you can replace deficiencies that are increasing your risk of cancer. You can have a diet which is anti-inflammatory, and that's another thing in and of itself. You know, I think gluten is a major problem for leaky gut. Remember, it causes inflammation, lowering blood sugar. With low glycemic foods, lowers insulin. All addresses the inflammatory part of the cause of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Eating organic and avoiding all those pesticides, and of course, certain supplementation. So the diet can play a very, very important role. Exercise is very important. You know what exercise does?
What?
Exercise decreases inflammation.
It does?
Exercise can decrease inflammation. Mm-hmm. Exercise can increase the telomeres. It's anti-aging. It reduces stress. And actually, one study in breast cancer patients showed a reduced risk of recurrence with exercise. So that's extremely important. You know, supplementation and diet are crucial. I don't think there's time to get into an anti-inflammatory diet unless you want me to address it later. By the way, I came across something parenthetically that made me smile.
What was that?
There's a silver lining in some suffering. I read something about menopausal women with more symptoms with hot flashes had a significantly lower risk of certain types of breast cancer.
Really? Why would that be?
I'm not sure, because, you know, they have fluctuating... Maybe because they don't have as much estrogen. It's not just estrogen level, but the fluctuations. And estrogen plays a role not in causing cancer, but in promotion of growth once cancer is there.
Mm.
So that's, I don't know if you want me to get into an anti-inflammatory diet.
Well, I do want to ask you this. I don't think we're going to have time for that. But when you mention gluten, that's a major part of our diets. And there's so many people now that are showing up as gluten intolerant or sensitive, allergic to wheat and gluten products. But if someone is not sensitive to it in any way, they don't have any gluten allergies, should they still reduce gluten in their diet to avoid inflammation caused by it?
Well, gluten damages the gut, which, remember, leaky gut causes inflammation. Yeah, because, you know, we're descendants of Paleolithic men. We're probably about 95 to 99% the same genetically. So genetically, bodies are not made to handle gluten. They were hunter-gatherers. They didn't have grains. So 1 in 10 people in the population, I'm not talking about celiac disease, which is maybe 1 in 110, but sensitive to gluten, and I don't quite call that an allergy, 1 in 10 people over the age of 40 or 50, Christian Northrup talked about this in a seminar, 1 in 3 women over 50 are probably sensitive to gluten, which means you're going to increase the risk of depression, inflammation. I see many, many people going off gluten. They feel better, their aches go away, the depression's lifted. I mean, I'm not saying it's a cure for these things, but gluten's a major contributing factor to many of the ailments that people have, particularly autoimmune diseases, lupus, MS, and thyroiditis, and those kinds of things. So I think the gluten, I think, like, as I said, everything I like is moral, illegal, or fattened. But what I do with people is not talk about going off something, but substituting, because when somebody feels deprived, they're going to be just stressed out and you're not helping them.
Right.
So what I do is give them substitutes. I look at what they like and I give them substitutes and they can come out as happy campers, so to speak.
Well, good. You know, Thelma, what I think I'd like to do is have, you've given us so much information here that I'm afraid people are going to pop. I'm about to burst with all of this information. I know people have questions. I have some questions. I want to give the number here. I just don't have it right in front of me of where to go. Hold on. So let me give the number of the radio station where you guys can call in. Oh, shoot. I don't have it. Do you have that number that I gave you?
Yes, I think I have it. I will be your savior here. 76, I reduced your stress, right?
Yeah.
760-683-2626.
Okay, say that again,
760-683-2626.
683-2626. So you can call in, and we'll answer your questions if we can. And so while people do that, let me just, because I might not have time at the end, I want to thank you now, Thelma, for all of your help. And then all that you've done and all that you've contributed, I'm going to have some questions for you at the end. So let's see if there's any callers right now.
Can I make one comment, Lindsay?
Sure.
I must emphasize the role of sleep. If people don't sleep, they're suppressing your immune system, and it does a lot of other things. So I think adequate sleep is part of, besides exercise and nutrition, adequate sleep is key because you need, during sleep, the immune system repairs itself. Without sleep, the immune system is impaired, and the nurses studied many years ago found those on the night shift without melatonin had an increased risk of breast cancer. So I think that's just one important thing to mention.
Yes, that is important, I think. I've had trouble with sleep before, certainly, and I know that I always think it's out of my control, but there are things you can do to get a good night's sleep, and tapping is certainly at the top of the list of that. So let's take some callers now. Let's see if there's anybody open for us.